Welcome to the Monty's Rockcast Halloween Special. And now, here's your host, Monty Caulfield.
Hey, 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 it's Monty, and welcome to my Halloween special. You know, when I was growing up, my folks told me that Halloween was evil, so I never really got to dress up or go trick-or-treating. But now that I'm older, I've decided to throw all caution to the wind. And that's why I will be doing the entire show today in costume while conjuring up the spirits of stupidity.
Weirdo.
So proceed at your own risk. This is going to be scary.
It's going to be awful.
Kind of like usual.
Ignorant.
But let's kick things off with something off my second crunchy CD, Vampire Girl.
This is going to suck really bad.
On this special episode, I'll be playing you some heavy and possibly scary tunes. I'll be telling you some terrifying stories. And I'll also be doing the same old crap that I always do.
I'm disappointed and sad.
But first, it's hard to believe, but it's been a whole year since I inducted 11 lucky people into the Monty's Rockcast Listener Hall of Fame. So without further ado, it's time for me to announce this year's inductees of this prestigious award. Now let me say first of all that I love all my listeners. I appreciate each and every one of you. Well, except for one or two who think it's fine to email me every week and insult me. Regardless, not every listener can get into my Hall of Fame. That is reserved for the diehards, for the people who have either been there from episode number one, or they've been listening for years, or they've contributed greatly to the show. For these lucky people, I will honor them today, and their names will go on my website, MontyCaulfield.net, where you can also find my CDs, t-shirts, and paintings.
Commercial's over.
But let's get to it with this year's first inductee into the class of 2013, Paul Morgan from Virginia. Yes, Mr. Morgan has been a faithful listener from the very beginning. And over the years, Paul has contributed with numerous emails, comments, top 10 lists, and extremely kind donations, I might add. He is a fellow bass player, quality individual, and now a member of the Rockcast Listener Hall of Fame. Congratulations, Paul Morgan. The next extremely fortunate person to be inducted into this elite class, Rockcast listener Mr. Phil Robinson. Like Paul Morgan, Phil has been listening since the early days of the show. He's been a constant contributor with emails, questions, and top tens. And pretty much after every episode, he will write me to give me his feedback and comments and just overall encouragement. And so congratulations, Phil Robinson.
Yay!
The next incredibly lucky person to weasel his way onto this list of honor is somewhat of a surprise, because I gotta be honest, I didn't think this guy had a chance of making it into the Hall of Fame. But joining the likes of John Huff in Canada and Eric from Orange County, it's Mr. David Whiteman. Yes, though he has never made it to one single Galactic Cowboy reunion show, David is the self-proclaimed number one fan of Galactic Cowboys. He has also listened to every single episode that I've ever done, and he has sent me literally thousands of emails, mostly about Dream Theater or Porcupine Tree.
Nerdy.
However, I cannot deny his faithfulness to the show and his constant contributions with top tens. Thank you, David.
You cannot be serious!
And the fourth and final inductee this year is somebody who has not been listening from the beginning, but whose contributions have been immeasurable. She has listened to every episode, usually twice, and over the last 3 years, she has become my biggest fan, my wife, and now Rockcast Hall of Famer, Lindsay Colvin. Lindsay not only introduces the show, she does the outros, she's been the news, traffic, and weather girl, she's been in numerous skits, and we work on them together, and she cracks me up on the daily, and seriously, she's the sweetest, sexiest woman I've ever known, and she's been so encouraging and supportive of me, and I just want to say thank you and congratulations, Lindsay Colvin. So there you go, the new inductees. Congratulations once again to Lindsay Colvin, Paul Morgan, Phil Robinson, and Mr. David Whiteman.
The new face of evil.
I can only imagine the excitement you're feeling right now, and I'm sure it won't wear off for days.
Yeah, right.
Now, perhaps you're someone that's sitting out there right now and you're thinking, hey, I should be in the Listener Hall of Fame. Well, to those people, I say hang in there. Kind of like the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, not everyone gets in the first year or the second year. Perhaps you haven't sent me enough top 10 lists or emails, or maybe you've been on steroids. That'll keep you out.
Oh, yeah.
Regardless, except for a couple of you, you're all winners and you're all special.
Yay!
And now, as promised, since this is a Halloween special, I will be telling you some scary stories throughout this podcast. However, I must warn you, these are not for the weak of heart. And some of these tales of horror are based on actual events. So enjoy, if you dare. Yeah. Yeah! This story begins when a man walks into an Apple computer store. He's like any other man, except he has a dream. And I know what you're thinking, but no, it's not to download free porn. This man has a dream to record music, or perhaps podcasts. And so he walks around the store, eventually finding a MacBook Pro laptop. It seems perfect, just what he needs. So he plops down $2,000 and walks out of the store, only to realize when he got home that his computer was possessed by the devil. Yes, you see, at first, everything was fine. He was able to record, he could make his podcasts, and GarageBand worked just fine with iTunes. But before you know it, there started being updates, and he started getting messages on his screen like, your hard drive is full, when he knew it wasn't full. I mean, how could it possibly be full? And then out of nowhere, here comes the spinning balls. And he'd just be sitting there watching the ball spinning and spinning. And time again, he'd take his computer back to the Apple store, but they'd just look at him like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he'd say, what do you mean? You're the genius bar. And they'd say, nope, never seen anything like this. And slowly but surely, the man just lost his mind. And the funny thing is, the man never did realize that his computer was possessed by the devil. We'll get back to some of those horror stories later, but right now, let's do a little Ask Monty.
Ask Monty.
Did you have a question?
Ask Monty.
Ask Monty.
Ask Monty.
Oh yes, you the listeners write me with your questions, and honestly, it would be wrong if I ignored them. So let's get it going with one from Rodney in Memphis. And Rodney says that he used to live in Kansas City like I do, and he grew up in Texas. But now living in the Memphis area, there is always this big debate about who has the best barbecue. And Rodney says, Monty, what's your opinion?
That's a big question.
Well, Rodney, I don't know that I've ever had Memphis barbecue, so I couldn't really comment on that. But I have had Kansas City BBQ, and I had a little down in Houston, Texas, while I was doing the Galactic Cowboy reunion. And to tell you the truth, I'd have to say that it just doesn't matter to me. It's all just food, and as long as it's not too spicy and it's not burning my mouth up while I eat it, I really don't care. I like me some pork ribs the best, and I also love barbecued chicken. And here in Kansas City, the place to go apparently is Oklahoma Joe's. I haven't been there, but I hear that's great. And I know a lot of people here like Gates Barbecue. But for me, I'm fine with Applebee's or someplace like that. And if you really want to know my favorite place, it's out in my backyard on Monty's Barbecue Grill.
Ha-ha!
Yeah, I may not know what the hell I'm doing, but it is the tasty.
And I could almost be sick.
Now, like usual, I got a lot of questions about Galactic Cowboys because people are still fired up over that reunion show we did back in September. And Matt Krogmeyer wondered if Galactic Cowboys would ever consider doing a festival next summer like Rocklahoma.
Yeah!
Well, yeah, Matt, I would love to do Rocklahoma or any of those festivals in Europe or the U.S. The hard part is just getting booked on them. So if anybody knows anyone who could hook us up with something like that, please drop me an email.
No.
Somebody mentioned that Mike Portnoy prog rock cruise the other day, and yeah, something like that would be very cool.
Ain't gonna happen.
Now, John Huff in Canada wanted to know how Alan and I originally got together with Ben and Dane to form Galactic Cowboys. And he also wanted to know what it was like the first time we got together and jammed.
The following story is remarkable.
Well, John, as you know, when Alan and I quit The Awful Truth, we didn't know what we were going to do, but we knew we were going to stick together. So we started writing some songs, and in the meantime, I was looking around for singers and guitar players. And I figured it wouldn't be easy because I wasn't just looking for somebody who was a great player or a singer. I wanted somebody who got the vision. And I remember going over and jamming with this one guy, and he was really good. He was a great singer and all that, but he just didn't understand what I was doing. And I was playing him these new songs I'd written, and there was just no chemistry there. Well, one day I get a call from Ben, and Ben and Dane had both been Awful Truth fans, and I'd seen them at the shows before, so I knew who he was. And he said, hey, I'm in this cover band, why don't you come out and check it out? So I did, and I thought, you know, the guy's a really good singer, he's good looking, and the whole bit, he'd be a great front man, but I just don't know if he'll fit. But he was like, come on, man, I really want to jam with you guys. And I was like, well, we're doing stuff that's kind of like Metallica or Voivod, and he didn't even know who those bands were. So I said, I'll tell you what, man, maybe you can sing on one of our demos sometime. And he was like, yeah, let's do it. So Alan and I recorded a couple of songs on a four-track, and I took it over and Ben sang on it. And when I played it for Alan, he was like, yeah, I like this guy. So I started hanging out with Ben once in a while, and he helped me get some stagehand work. And one day we were working on a King's X video. And that day, Dane was there on the set, and we started talking, and I was like, hey, Dane, you want to come over and check out some of the stuff I've been writing? And he was like, yeah. So Dane and I get together, and I probably had to go pick him up because he didn't have a car. Dane was only like 18 or 19 years old when I met him, and he didn't even have an amp. But I said, no problem, you can borrow one of mine. And so he came over and we jammed a little bit. And I was like, yeah, this guy gets it. He was totally into what we were doing. So I said, let's set up a practice and jam. So since we were all friends with the guys in King's X, they said, hey, you can share our practice place. And so we went downtown Houston and set up for the first time. Well, Ben was so excited. He just kept going, what do you think, Monty? You think it's going to work? Huh? And I was just like, I don't know, man. Let's just wait and see how it sounds. So it was going pretty well, and we jammed for about an hour. And I finally said, you know, I've got this song called Why Can't You Believe in Me, but it doesn't have any lyrics except for the chorus. So we got in a little circle, and we all got a vocal part and started harmonizing, and our eyes got really big. And I don't think any of us could believe what we were hearing because it was so good.
Why can't you believe in me? Oh, 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 oh.
It was just an instant spark. And I think we all knew at that very moment that we had something really special. And I'll never forget that day as we were walking out of that practice room, Ben was just going, it's gonna happen, Monty, it's gonna happen. And I'm thinking, yeah, I think you're right, Ben.
Nothing has happened.
Well, after that, we kept practicing. We got a huge break opening for King's X on an East Coast tour. And within 6 months of getting together for the first time, we got signed to Geffen Records.
Well, whoop-de-doo.
But that's how we got together, John. And, you know, it's amazing how things work out sometimes. Had I stayed in the Awful Truth or I hadn't met one of those guys, maybe everything is different. But it worked out. We had a nice long run. It was fun. And here's to hoping that we have a lot more fun in the future.
None of this is fun.
In other GC-related questions, Matt Norenberg in Minnesota said, hey man, what guitar tuning was used on At the End of the Day?
That is a brilliant question.
Well, the easy answer, Matt, is most of that album was in standard drop D tuning. And for any of you non-musicians or for people who don't play guitar, it's where you tune the low E string down to D and the rest of the strings stay in standard tuning. And the reason you do that is because it allows you to play really heavy riffs on the bottom two strings and it just sounds massive. So most of the songs on that CD were in drop D except for It's Not Over, which was in drop C. And I believe the song Ants was in some weird guitar tuning that Wally came up with. And honestly, I couldn't even tell you what it was, but for the most part, it was drop D.
Isn't that interesting?
I also got a message from Wayne Ledbetter on Facebook, and he said, hey, Monty, I was listening to the Galactic Cowboys song The Lens this morning, and I've seen that painting that the song was about, and I wondered if that girl who was in the picture had ever heard the song, and if so, what'd she think about it?
What are you talking about?
Well, in case you don't know what Wayne is talking about, it goes back to when I was living in Houston. And the local public television station wanted to know if I wanted to do a little feature thing on my art. And so they came to my house and filmed this little 10-minute segment, and it ran a couple of times. And about a week later, I get a call from this girl wanting a painting. And she wanted me to do a portrait of her, and I said, well, sure, it'll cost you about $400, but yeah, I'd be glad to. Well, I'd never met her, and I didn't know what to expect, but when she got to my house, it turned out she was one of these goth girls. And she had real pasty white skin, and wore a white wedding dress, and set up all kinds of candles and stuff. And she had a purse that looked like a casket. And I'm looking through the lens of my camera, and I'm thinking, wow, she's kind of scary.
But also a weirdo.
And if I'm honest, she was also quite attractive. But I was married at the time, so I just stuck to business and did the painting. Well, I worked my butt off on that thing, and it must have taken me a couple of months to finish. But when I finally did, it turned out great. And so I called the girl up to tell her it's done, and she was just like, yeah, I'll try and come by sometime and pick that up. Well, to make a long story short, she never did pay me for it, and she never did get the painting. In fact, she never even saw it. But I ran into her about a year later, and she asked me about the painting, and I said, yeah, it's one of the best I've ever done. And once again, there was no interest in buying it or getting it or seeing it. She was just like, oh, okay. So I just held on to the painting, and then about 10 years later, sold it for twice as much as she was going to pay me. So it all worked out, but no, I don't think she ever heard the song, because I don't think she was really interested in my music or really in my painting. Because really, over the years, the more I thought about it, the thing I think she was interested in was me. And once she kind of figured out that we weren't going to get it on, she suddenly lost interest in the whole thing. On the other hand, I could be completely wrong, but thanks for your question, Wayne.
The whole story just never made any sense.
Moving on, Ryan Sessions wrote to say that he was surprised I mentioned Vengeance Rising and Roger Martinez on the last show. And he wanted to know if I had ever had any dealings with Roger back in the day.
Would you like to hear the answer?
Well, yeah, Vengeance Rising was this Christian thrash metal band back in the late 80s. And I actually met them one night in Houston when Doug Pennick and I were just rolling down Westheimer. And we looked over and there they were playing in somebody's yard. And we hung out for a while and watched them, and they were tearing it up. But in between songs, Roger would preach and stuff. So after they got done, we talked to him, and Roger was a really cool guy and really nice. Well, I didn't see him for several years later, and we were on tour and playing in Anaheim, and all of a sudden, Roger shows up at the backstage door. And I'm like, hey, man, come on in. So we're hanging out. And we're doing our vocal exercises, you know, meow, 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 meow. And every time we would take that little break between meows, he would go, hey, man, so this is what I'm doing now. And I'm thinking, okay, well, this guy's a little out there, but he's a nice guy. I like him. So we get done doing the vocal warm-ups, and we're getting ready to go on stage. And he's like, okay, man, well, I'll see you later, man. And right as he leaves, he hands me this letter. So after the show, I read it, and it's kind of a copy of a letter, so he apparently had given it to a lot of different people. And in the letter, he is just pissed off at everyone. But mainly it was his church and Christians, and he felt like the whole thing was a joke. So I found that kind of interesting, and since then I've heard people say that he's into Satan or something. But honestly, I don't know. I haven't talked to him in years. And the experience I had with him is that he was a really good guy. So that's all I know. That's all I got to say.
I think you're making this up.
And a final question comes from Aaron Cunningham, who says, Monty, what's your views on games that you actually use guitars? For example, Rocksmith. Do you think you would learn faster or not?
Tell me the answer to that.
Well, Aaron, I've heard of Rocksmith, but I've never seen it or played it. Because I don't play video games.
A complete loser.
For one thing, with my music and art and the podcasts, I just don't really have time. But the real true reason why I don't play video games is that I suck at them all.
Yeah, you do.
Even a game like Guitar Hero, you would think I'd be good at that, but no. I could never figure it out or get good, and I could never beat my daughter. But if there's a game like Rocksmith where you're playing a real guitar and it's teaching you how to play, I would think that's a great thing. And it sure sounds like a better use of time than just blowing stuff up.
What's wrong with that?
But that's just me, and this has been Ask Monty. All right, prepare yourself once again for one of my scary stories. And it goes something like this. It was a day like any other day. A man got up early in the morning, went in and had a bowl of cereal, crunchy raisin bran to be specific, and then he went downstairs and turned on his computer. He was planning to work on the Halloween special of his podcast, when out of nowhere, his computer screen suddenly went blue. Yes, it was the dreaded blue screen of death. Realizing things were serious, he knew he had no other choice but to pack up his computer, drive downtown, and take it to the Apple Store.
Huh?
And by Apple Store, I don't mean a fruit stand. I mean the Macintosh Apple Store. After standing in line for about a half hour, he was able to talk to one of the geniuses at the Genius Bar. And the genius said, looks like we're going to have to replace your logic board.
Ah!
After hearing this, the man said, well, what's that going to run me? And the genius replied, well, it's going to be about $500 or $600. After picking himself up off the floor of the Apple Store, the man said, gee, are you sure? I didn't think it was gonna be that much. To which the genius replied, well, you see, sir, your warranty has expired, and, oh yeah, by the way, your computer is possessed by the devil. Well, that is truly a nightmare, but here's something that's equally scary. It's my rapid fire segments.
I have never been so afraid.
Let's start it off with the email of the week, and it comes to us from Ryan Kellison. And Ryan says, 15 years ago today, I set out alone on a 2-hour trek to see my two favorite bands, King's X and Galactic Cowboys, play for the very first time. What this date means to me especially is that it is the 15th anniversary of me getting hit in the head with your bass headstock.
Ouch!
You see, the crowd was pogoing, and I made sure that I spent the entire evening in the front row. So the whack was fairly inevitable. But the minor collision didn't hurt at all, didn't leave a mark or anything, and you were so cool.
That's hard to believe.
You totally reached down to give me a couple of pats on the head mid-song and was checking to see that I was all right. I still remember just continuing to go crazy with everyone else, assuring you with a thumbs up that everything was cool, with what seems like one of the biggest ear-to-ear grins I've ever had. Thanks for the memories, Monty. Well, you are welcome, Ryan, and it's always my pleasure to leave people with good memories. But what can I say? I was just trying to crush your skull.
Ha!
But seriously, I do remember that happening, and I felt really bad about it. And I really haven't hit that many people in the head with my bass because I try to be careful of that kind of thing. But I'm so glad I could leave a lasting impression and possibly a mark on your head.
You're mean.
Next up, This Week in Political Correctness.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Have you heard about this yet? The media here in the USA is all up in arms because they want the Washington Redskins to change the name of the team because it's offensive to Indians. And they're not just saying it would be a good idea like Barack Obama did. They are more or less demanding it. And if you don't agree that mascots like the Indians or Warriors are offensive, then you are just a racist.
Absolutely.
And some of these guys at ESPN, they won't even say the name Redskins anymore. Oh my God. It's so terrible, I'm just going to refer to them as the Washington Football Players.
It just makes me feel so much better.
Now, if you think this sounds insane, well, it's happened before. Back when I was a youngster, there was an NBA team called the Washington Bullets. But of course, these days, guns and bullets are more evil than anything, right?
Totally.
So they changed it to something much less evil and offensive, the Wizards.
Much better.
Apparently, the Necromancers was already taken, so they just went with Wizards.
Oh, cool.
As far as I'm concerned, the owner for the Redskins should tell everyone to kiss his butt. Because if they do it, then everyone's going to have to do it, including the Kansas City Chiefs. And even though there are much more fitting names for this city, like the Kansas City Redneck Drunken Honkies, there's nothing wrong with the Chiefs.
I heard that.
Besides, there's a whole lot worse mascots out there that no one said a word about. For instance, how about all these teams and universities that have names that kind of sound dirty? Like the Oregon State Beavers and the South Carolina Gamecocks.
That is filthy.
Of course, you got the Hawaii University Rainbow Warriors.
Gay.
And to me, the Green Bay Packers has always just sounded like a homophobic slur.
That's offensive to me.
So ESPN and everyone else just needs to shut the hell up about the Washington Redskins. And let's just concentrate on changing the name of the Utah Jazz to something more appropriate, like the Utah Mormons.
I like that.
Seriously, when you think of Utah, does jazz pop into your mind? I don't think so.
That's ridiculous.
You know, right about now, I'm asking myself, what's on TV? Well, that's a good question. And the answer is a lot of crap.
Of course.
For example, the other day I saw this new show called The People's Couch. And this is where somebody got the idea to set up a camera and literally video people watching TV. And there you have it. That's a show.
Simply brilliant.
It's a TV show where people sit on a couch and watch other TV shows and make comments. And by the end of the half hour, I was completely ashamed of myself for actually wasting the time that it took to watch it.
You're pathetic!
Now, if you're interested in seeing this, it's on the Bravo channel. So, of course, everyone on the show is either gay or, if it's a parent, they're completely worthless. Kind of like all the parents on Nickelodeon or the Disney Channel.
I'm about to vomit.
Yeah, if you've got kids, you've probably noticed that the shows that they watch no longer have parents, and if they do, they're dumb as hell.
Morons!
On most of these shows, you don't see parents at all, or you're raised by your brother or a babysitter, or maybe dad is just a warlock. I'm not really sure what the message is that these people are trying to get across, other than adults suck and you don't really need them.
Yeah, that's it.
I'll tell you what, though. My biggest complaint about these shows on Disney is, why do they have to be so horrible?
I'm not sure.
The plots are bad, the writing is bad, and the acting is just horrific. And I can only imagine what goes on when these people who make these shows are pitching their ideas to the networks. It must be like, okay, it's set in a high school, and all the teachers are idiots, and the kids have no parents.
So far, so good.
There's gonna be about 3 smoking hot teenage girls, one of whom is clumsy, one's a snob, and one is seemingly retarded.
Awesome!
Now, we wanna make sure that the kids watching at home have something to relate to. So let's make sure all these characters have no respect for authority and that the girls are in high heels and mini skirts at all times.
Well, you have my attention now.
I do have to admit, though, the TV is a great babysitter. And if the little urchins are on your nerves, all you gotta do is stick them in front of the tube for 3 or 4 hours and watch them turn into zombies.
Which is just terrific.
However, I do have to wonder, are they losing more brain cells by watching an episode of Sam and Cat? Or should I just encourage them to do drugs? Speaking of drugs, I saw this commercial the other day for these pills that help lower your risk for blood clots and strokes. However, they seem to have a few drawbacks. You see, the possible side effects include nausea, dizziness, swelling of the face and tongue, trouble breathing, and abnormal bleeding. The good news is, if you keep taking these pills, the plus sides include less major bleeding. However, when you do start bleeding, it may take longer for the bleeding to stop. And oh, by the way, if you ever decide to stop taking these pills, it'll actually increase your risk of having a stroke and bleeding.
That's probably good.
As for me, if I want to increase my chances of going into a coma, I'll just turn on a new episode of Saturday Night Live. Once again, I turn it on thinking, well, it's a new season, they've got some new cast members, maybe it'll be better. But no, the writing is still terrible, and I still don't understand who the target audience is. You've got all this adult humor and these political sketches, but the humor is written at a level that only a 14-year-old would find funny. So in the end, I don't know who's laughing at this crappy program, but it sure isn't me. And a week or two ago, Bruce Willis hosted, and I swear to God, I did not laugh one time. I laid there in bed for an hour and a half, fighting off the sleep, and I didn't even as much give it a
Something's wrong with you.
Now, I will say that the girl that does Ellen DeGeneres and the black guy that does Obama, they are really talented. But for the most part, SNL in 2013 is a big, giant fail.
It sucks.
Switching gears, let's do a top 10 list. And this one comes to us from Brian Krueger. And Brian has sent a list of his top 10 favorite rock album covers. And this is a cool category because I personally love album artwork. I've done a few CD covers in my life myself, and I miss those days when you'd open up the album and look at the lyrics and see all the artwork inside. It was really cool. But here we go with Brian's list, and it starts out at number 10 with Mental Health by Quiet Riot. Number 9 is Power Slave by Iron Maiden. Number 8 is Live After Death by Iron Maiden. And number 7 is Killers by Iron Maiden.
They're evil!
You know, I was talking about team mascots earlier, and basically Iron Maiden has its own mascot in Eddie. So I'd have to agree with Brian. Iron Maiden album covers and their t-shirts are always badass.
They are of the devil.
Number 6 is Galactic Cowboys with Space in Your Face. And that's an album cover we've been asked about a lot over the years. People want to know who the guy was in the space suit and how all that came about. And the deal on that is that I had done a couple of paintings that I was hoping to get on there. But Geffen wanted to do something different, and so their art department sent out a guy from New York and paid him thousands of dollars to take some pictures. And he actually turned out to be really cool. He had an awesome style. And at one point he said, hey, would you guys put these pantyhose over the tops of your head? And we were like, yeah, sure.
Jackholes!
As for the guy on the cover, that was a dude that Ben knew. He worked out on this ranch that had a lot of horses, and Ben used to inseminate horses out there, but that's another story. But we rented the spacesuit from a costume shop, and they took a bunch of pictures of him, and that was basically it.
That's it?
Getting back to Brian's list, number 5 is AC/DC for Those About to Rock. Number 4 is Def Leppard with Pyromania. Number three is Blackout from the Scorpions. And oh yeah, remember the forks in the eyes?
Yeah, no.
Number two is Balls to the Wall by Accept. And number one on Brian's list of favorite album covers is Rush, Test for Echo.
It would not be my first choice.
Well, I actually had to look that up because I didn't remember that album cover. And looking at it right now, I still don't remember that album cover.
Oh my God.
My love for Rush kind of ended after their fifth or sixth album. But when I was in high school, I was full on into them, and I had this Rush t-shirt that had the naked guy on there, and my dad was like, "What is that?" And I'm like, "I don't know, it's their symbol. I don't know.
This freaks me out."
But I wore that thing with extreme pride because no one else in my school was into Rush. But looking back at it now, I'm thinking, what was that about?
Gay.
Oh, well, good job, Brian. That was a great list, and you are going to the playoffs.
Playoffs?
Okay, I'm going to wrap up Rapid Fire segments with Rapid Fire CD reviews. And let's get it going with the new one from Motorhead. It's called Aftershock. You always know what you're going to get with Motorhead because they play rock and roll. And that's exactly what this is, straight ahead, no frills rock. There's really nothing new about this new album, but it is good. So at least they'll have a good reason to go on tour.
Rock and roll!
Okay, here's a CD that some of you guys out there may like more than I do. If you were into thrash metal back in the 80s, you'll remember a band called Metal Church. And well, they've got a new album out, and it's called Generation Nothing. I've heard a couple of people say they love this album. I personally don't. It reminds me of Overkill or something like that. So if you're into that, we'll check it out.
This is horrible.
Next, the former singer of the band Of Mice and Men has started a new band, and they're called Dayshell. I've been waiting for this thing for a long time, and it's finally here, and I'm really digging it. Yeah. That guy's name is Shaley Bourget, and he is one of my favorite singers of all time. His voice is incredible, and this album isn't as heavy as of Mice and Men is, but I love it. It's melodic all the way through, and you should definitely check out Day Shell. I've got time for one more scary story of horror. Brace yourself. It was a day like any other day, when around 12 o'clock noon, a man decides he's gonna go through the drive-thru of a Wendy's fast food restaurant. He pulls up and looks at the menu board and decides he's gonna order a double hamburger with cheese, no mustard, fries, and a large Dr. Pepper. The minimum wage high school dropout inside the Wendy's says over the speaker, "That'll be $6.75. Pull around." The man drives around, gets his order, and then drives directly home, never once checking to see what was in the bag. When the man arrives home, he sits down in front of his television with full expectations of enjoying a relaxing evening and a Wendy's combo meal. Slowly, he reaches into the bag, pulling out the burger covered in foil, and he immediately recognizes that the burger is not nearly as big as the burger pictured on the menu board.
Ah!
Slightly annoyed at this point, the man says, "Oh well, what the hell, I'm hungry, it's fine, it's fine." After deciding not to let the deceptive nature of the menu board ruin his evening, the man decides to go ahead and eat. However, before he bites into his double burger with cheese, he hesitates and decides to take a look underneath the bun. Slowly, he peeled back the bread to gaze inside, and to his shocked amazement, he found not only cheese, but his entire burger was covered in mustard. Completely perplexed and devastated by this discovery, he began asking himself, why?
Why?
Over and over he asked himself, how could this happen? I mean, how could there be mustard on my burger when I specifically said no mustard? It's not like I told him, hey, when you get through making that burger, would you pour a whole bottle of mustard all over it? No. I mean, I know these morons that work there are completely incapable of getting anything right, but could you just do that one thing for me, please? Is it really that hard to keep the mustard off instead of putting it on? I mean, after all, this isn't brain surgery. You're just working at Wendy's, come on. Oh, but you think you need a raise. Well, maybe if you weren't so freaking incompetent, you might work your way up to making $10 an hour. For the love of God, how many times do I have to tell you, I hate mustard? And that is gonna do it, my friends, for this scary edition of the Rockcast. I'm sorry it took so long to get this episode done, but my computer actually did break down, and I had to send it off and get it fixed, but it's back, and I'm up and running again.
Who cares?
I'm gonna play you one more song off that new Motorhead album, and I hope you like it. But until next time, this has been Monty saying take care, don't let anyone tell you what to like, unless it's me, and
rock on.